from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. We all know that school can be stressful. Pressure to do well, pressure to please parents and peers, too. Now, imagine dealing with that if you're a homeless child. California has more homeless school children than any state in the nation. According to the United States Department of Education, almost one-third of all homeless kids went to school in our state. And in the Bay Area, schools are struggling to meet the needs of homeless children as budgets grow ever tighter. This morning on Forum, we'll hear more about the challenges that homeless students face and what can be done to help. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Part of the story can be told by numbers, and part of it can't. Numbers first. There are more homeless children in California than any other state. In San Francisco, 2,200 public school students have no place to call home. And not surprisingly, those students often struggle in school. Over 40% of homeless kids repeat a grade. Those are just some of the numbers. But if you read Jill Tucker's story in the San Francisco Chronicle last Sunday, you know that numbers don't tell you everything. Her piece began by describing just where one 10-year-old San Francisco boy had slept in the past 2 months, locations that included a bus shelter, the street, a homeless shelter, and a park. This morning on Forum, the growing number of homeless children attending our schools, the challenges they face, and the challenges schools face in responding to those needs. Joining us to take up this topic this morning, Jill Tucker, the education writer at the San Francisco Chronicle, whose story I just referenced. Jill, good morning.
Good morning.
Joining us, too, is Nicole McAuliffe. She is a former teacher and principal within the San Francisco Unified School District, now director of advancement at Mission Dolores Academy, which is an independent Catholic school in the Mission serving a majority low-income population. Nicole McAuliffe, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And here, too, is Liz Torres. She is a parent liaison working with homeless families and their children at Fairmount Elementary School in San Francisco, which serves the Bernald Heights and Mission neighborhoods in San Francisco. Liz Torres, good morning. Thanks for
joining
us.
Thank you. It's an honor. Thank you.
So I'd like to have you just start us out, if you would, Jill, by describing what you saw when you walked with the family and the young 10-year-old that I described in the beginning. What did you see that morning, starting perhaps with some of the obstacles that are presented by just getting to school?
Yes, it was an interesting morning. It was a cold morning, and we met Rudy and his parents and his three-year-old brother, Danny, at the shelter that they're staying at in the Mission. It's a drop-in shelter, so it isn't a place where they have their own room. It's linoleum floor that they share with other families. It's supposed to be a women's drop-in shelter, but they've had to accommodate families and children because of the numbers that are out there. So as they came out and all other kids across the city were getting ready to go to school and packing their lunches and eating their breakfast, they came out of the shelter and with the stroller, Danny's stroller, filled with items, a bag slung over the father's back, the mother carrying things, Rudy with his backpack. And they walked across the street and they stood in front of a storage facility and they waited. And this wasn't part of our agenda of the morning. We weren't quite sure where we were going, the photographer and I, but we were there just to see what their morning was like. And the family waited there until 8 o'clock in the morning when the doors of the storage facility rolled up so that they could store all their possessions for the day. They couldn't leave them at the shelter if they were leaving the shelter. And so at 8 o'clock in the morning when the doors were rolling up at this storage facility where they were going to throw all of their possessions, that's when they were serving breakfast at Rudy's school. And so he was missing breakfast. We then took Muni with them. We watched the first Muni bus pull away as they were crossing the street, their Muni bus, so they had to wait for the next one. The mom is saying, well, he's going to be late again. And the day unfolded, the kids were hungry. They didn't have milk for the three-year-old. They had formula that they had gotten at the shelter. So the three-year-old is drinking formula. Rudy hadn't had breakfast. He's walking to school, and he turns to his mom as they're walking the final hill after riding two buses to school. And he says, "Mom, I'm cold and I'm hungry." Hmm. And we've all heard our kids say that before, but there was such a difference in that. And I've covered kids in the Bay Area for 15 years. And I just looked at the photographer, and we just shook our heads and just said, well, this is sadly the stereotype of the lives that these kids lead.
And those stories, Liz Torres, yes, you see every day. And there are not one, not 10, but hundreds, thousands now across the city.
I can only speak to my experience over at Fairmont Elementary. We're a Spanish immersion school, which leads to a different dynamic. We have a lot of Latino families, monolingual speaking, which adds another component to the homelessness. And homelessness does take different aspects and different faces at Fairmont. We have people that are in shelters, families that are in shelters, but we also have a lot of families that are doubled, tripled up. I have a family that has...
Meaning what? Tell us what that means.
They're like two, three, four, even five families sometimes living in one apartment. The apartment has been cut up into to allow different spaces for the families. In one, I have a family that lives in a studio. There are five people in the studio. So it's almost like two families in a studio. Dad comes home late at night, and of course, the kids wake up. They are drowsy when they come to school. I also have people that are in shelters. Fortunately or unfortunately, the shelters that they live in do give them breakfast. But throughout the day, you know, mom has to fend for herself during the day because they have to leave. So, yeah, we have different aspects of homelessness in ours.
And Nicole McAuliffe, in your experience, both as a teacher and principal within San Francisco Unified, now working at a school in the Mission that's serving a low-income population, where does that leave kids as they begin their school day? Just as you listen to these descriptions, they're starting out already with a significant load on them, different than what we normally associate with how a school day begins.
Exactly. They come to school, they're exhausted. You know, kids who come to school hungry every day, it really, you know, wears on them. It's really hard because many of the children that we're describing, they're missing out on the core instructional time. They're coming to school, you know, 15, 20 minutes late, some as late as an hour each day, and they're really losing instructional time. And they come in and they're behind their peers. The routines have started, and you know, they have to fit themselves into a classroom environment.
Jill, when you were following the Wynn family that morning, one of the things that was striking to me about your article is just how, from the beginning, they're behind. I mean, literally behind. They're late. Someone graciously got Rudy something to eat, but there again, he's not really in class. He's already laboring behind where everyone else is.
Right. He walked in maybe 10 minutes late. The class was already in the middle of a discussion about you know, comparing books by the same author. He walked in. He was sort of discombobulated. Many of the homeless kids, I mean, Rudy and other homeless kids have a high absentee rate as well, not just tardiness. So, you know, they might not be there, you know, a couple days a week even. And so they're way behind. And then even when they show up, they just are lost. And as Rudy's teacher said, talking about the homeless kids that she has had and that she has seen, they all sort of have this lost look about them. And I think it is, and I saw it in Rudy's face and his brother's face, where there's so much going on in their little lives that trying to sit on the floor of a classroom and talk about the differences between two books by the same author almost seems silly, if you will. And yet their education is so, so critical.
What have you seen, Nicole McAuliffe, that can begin to engage children who are in such difficult, compelling circumstances?
Well, I think consistency, you know, consistency of routines. You know, children who come in to a school environment, they usually have their own cubby or their own desk. If they're in a homeless situation, they don't have their own things. So I think what's really important for schools to do is provide the personal space for these children. You know?
Because it's the one place where they might have that?
Exactly. The only place. You know, and one thing that I've seen as a teacher and a principal is very often, you know, homeless children, they're up all night. They're not getting a good night's sleep. They're not feeling secure. So they come into the classroom and they find their desk that, you know, has their name on it, has their belongings in it, and they get there and they can put their head down and they can go to sleep. So providing the children the space where they can feel that they have privacy, that they can feel that they can store their belongings, the consistency of routines, I think that's helpful. But one of the challenges you have as a teacher and as a principal, you don't always know which children are in these situations. Because it was profound for me that Jill had this access to this family, because my experience is that a lot of homeless families are very private. They keep their situation to themselves and don't really share what they're going through.
How do you deal with that, Liz Torres? Because on the one hand, it would seem that's totally understandable. Who would want to necessarily volunteer that information? And yet it's information that teachers in the schools need if they're going to give those children what they need.
Exactly. And I think that's the important part I feel in my position is to provide not only consistency, but to also provide this sense of community. Many of them feel isolated, that they cannot talk to people about their situation. Also, just providing trust. I've been at this position for 5 years, so now many families know me and feel safe approaching me about their situation. But if we don't have that, and with the cuts that come down the pike, we lose that personnel, that contact, and therefore we lose the trust that many people have strived so hard. And I honestly believe providing community, letting these families know that they're not isolated, that they have a community that cares for them, that they're validated, and that they will be supported is very important.
The trust issue is something that's must be a delicate balance to walk. There was a powerful story that I'm sure many of our listeners and maybe some of you saw on 60 Minutes a week or two ago about a homeless family. And one of their concerns was they didn't want to volunteer this information because they were afraid that social service would come and take their kids away.
Exactly.
So how do you gain that trust without parents worrying that that's going to mean that they'll wind up losing their kids?
In my situation, families know me. Families that have been there for 3, 4, 5 years know me. So they talk to these families. Most of these families will talk to another family first. And then they say, come and approach Liz. She can help you with food. We have a food bank at our school, so they access that. I also have a little donations of uniforms that other parents have donated. So we have uniforms for the, you know, we try and accommodate their needs. But it's basically word of mouth and knowing that I'm the person that's going to be there.
Just one quick word of explanation about uniforms. You are within the San Francisco Unified Schools, but uniforms in this case are something that's an equalizer, right?
Yes, thank God. Yes.
Liz Torres, parent liaison with Fairmount Elementary School in San Francisco, joining us along with Nicole McAuliffe, a former teacher and principal within San Francisco Unified, now at Mission Dolores Academy, and Jill Tucker, education writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, whose story prompted our wanting to do this program this morning. We're joined now also by Carolyn Woodfin. She is a mother of two children. She has a son at Galileo High School, and she's currently living at a residential hotel in San Francisco. Carolyn Woodfin, thanks for joining us as well.
Good morning.
Good morning. Tell us something about the challenges that you face, given the uncertainty of where you're living and that your 16-year-old faces going to Galileo High.
Well, actually, you know, we have been in a drop-in center. We've been in a shelter. Now we're in a residential hotel. And, you know, if I don't come up with the money by 12 noon today, we'll be put out of here. And, you know, it's difficult because there aren't many agencies out there that can help you. I mean, my daughter and I, my niece, we've all been looking for jobs, you know, and one thing they say, we're hiring. Then you go in and they're telling you, well, you're too old to work. We're looking for a more youthful person. So it's not like we're just trying to take advantage of the system. We're not trying to live off the system. But it's almost like you don't have any other choice but to live off the system who is shutting down. And it's very challenging for my son to have to go to school because he's embarrassed.
Yeah.
This is an embarrassing situation. I mean, this morning when he left out, he said, "Mom, when school is over, where am I supposed to go?"
Boy.
And it's sad because it's sad and it's very heartbreaking as a parent. As a parent, there are times I feel like a failure.
Yeah. And so literally your son, when school is over today, half a dozen hours from now, he's not going to know where home is. He's not going to know necessarily where to go.
No, he's not. Unless I can come up with $290, which I don't know where that's going to come from.
And you have to get that and you have to find that in the next 2 hours and 40 minutes. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
How is your son handling school, Terilyn? Is he able to keep up given this situation that he is contending with, that you're all contending with?
Well, see, my son has some other issues that he's dealing with because my son has a medical disability. And that, you know, with the medication that he takes, that's another thing. I have to juggle whether to give him the medication or not. If I give him the medication, about 3 or 4 hours later, he's lethargic. He's asleep. And he's not getting education anyway. If I don't give it to him, then something he may come in contact with may be a trigger and cause him to go into a flare-up. So I juggle the medication issue, but there have been times when his counselors have told me that, yes, Ricky is not getting enough rest or something's going on. And, you know, that's when we were staying in the drop-in center. You can't make everybody go to sleep because your child has to get up and go to school the next morning. So you're in a facility with other families and singles and, you know, and all of that. And you can't make people do what you want them to do just because your child needs to go to sleep.
Terilyn, stay with us if you would, please. We want to get some reactions to the story that you've told, and we'll get back more of your comments and thoughts as our program continues. As long as you're able, I realize you've got a lot of other important things to contend with, and if you have to go deal with that business, obviously please do. If you can stay with us, we'd love to have your continued participation. Nicole McAuliffe, as you hear Terilyn describe that story, it takes us back. I mean, that's about as dealing with as much uncertainty as you could possibly deal with, that her son does not know where to go when school ends today.
And the fact that he's expected to, you know, go to class and, you know, participate and engage in discussions and have, you know, just a normal school day. It's amazing that there are children. There are so many children in our schools that face the same challenges.
Jill Tucker, how is San Francisco Unified contending with this? There are more homeless kids in the schools, some 400 more than there were last year. We all know what the situation is with budgets in our current situation in the state of California and San Francisco. How are schools dealing with this?
You know, the school district does prioritize this because they realize these are the kids that are often landing at the very bottom of the achievement gap. They score in far below basic or below basic levels on the standardized test, which means they're way behind. And so one of the priorities that they have set in terms of helping these kids is giving them bus passes. And while that may sound very simple to these families, it's the difference between these kids getting to school and not getting to school.
What about something as also perhaps as simple as altering bus routes? I mean, do the buses go to the right places? You were describing the situation that the Wynn family had, rushing to catch the bus, and they missed the bus.
Right. You know, because these families like Terilyn's family, they've moved around so much, trying to figure out what bus they need to take or if there is a school bus that might be able to drop them close to home and having to change that frequently, it's a very difficult situation. And when you have parent liaisons like Liz who can help coordinate that, that's great. Not all the schools have those. The schools that are struggling often have parent liaisons. But the school districts often, they also are providing backpacks, school supplies, counseling, and tutoring for homeless students, in addition to all the other medical and other types of things that they provide to low-income kids in general.
Terilyn, if you're with us still, can you tell us about the relationship that you've had with the school? Are you getting any support from the school? Is there a parent liaison at Galileo that can provide you with some assistance?
If there is one, I don't know of that person. The only person that I've been able to talk to, and he's pretty much like a case manager for my son, is at one of the teacher counselors at the school. But, I mean, you know, when he needed art supplies, because I could not afford to go out and get what he needed, the teacher told me there's no problem. You know, we have that set up. We have a lot of children who are in the same situation, and those supplies are provided, but it never was. And I felt bad when my son received a bad grade because I could not afford to go out and get the supplies.
Terilyn, where, if you're not able to raise the money that you need to stay at the residential hotel that you have to come up with by noon today, where will you go?
I don't really know. I really don't know because I am with Connecting Point, and I'm on the list, the priority list for a shelter, but because there are no openings, I'm left on that list. So, you know, there might be a shelter I could go to. There might not be a shelter I could go to because when I was at the shelter, they were filling up. Every night it got larger and more larger. And some of these shelters, like the winter shelter in Bethel, AME, it's not a very large room. So it can't accommodate more than, and that's with giving people walking space and your own little, make you feel like you've got your own little space. It can't hold any more than about 10 families, and that's pushing it.
Terilyn Woodfin, she's joining us at this time as she is struggling with finding a place to live, which she may not have 2.5 hours from now. Her son is at Galileo High School. She also has a daughter and a niece that she cares for. We're also going to connect with the other program that you mentioned, Compass Family Services, to hear more about what the homeless situation is throughout San Francisco. We'll hear from them in the second part of our program. Terilyn, we wish you all good luck and all good wishes as you contend with this over the next few hours. And we hope that you find a place to stay. And we hope that your son is able to continue his studies at Galileo High School. Thank you for sharing your story with us this morning.
Thank you.
We are going to take a short break in just a moment. We'd like to hear from you as well. If you have dealt with this problem in your life, we'd like to hear from you. If you are a former teacher or a teacher currently who is contending with this and has thoughts on how they can help kids deal with this situation, we'd like to hear from you. If you are involved in city and social programs about contending with this, we'd like to hear from you. And all our listeners as well. If you have thoughts, ideas, concerns, Jill Tucker was saying earlier that she has gotten more response to this story than any she's written in the past 15 years. We'd like to hear your responses as well. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. You can go to our Facebook page as well. Or you can join us on our website. Just go to kqed.org/forum and you can add your comments there. We'll be back in just a moment. Take up your calls and talk more about the needs of homeless children in San Francisco and in the Bay Area and what we can do to help. There's more of this on Forum after this. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, homeless kids and the challenges they face at our schools, the challenges our schools face in trying to meet those needs. Before the break, we were hearing the story of Terilyn Woodfin, who is living at a residential hotel now in San Francisco. Short on cash, has to come up with that by noon today. And we're getting lots of reaction to that from our listeners this morning, not surprisingly, who want to help. And we want to spend a moment talking about how to respond to those needs. So we're joined now by Elizabeth Anker, who is the Assistant Program Director at Compass Family Services in San Francisco, which is an agency that works with homeless families, trying to coordinate and direct them to the various shelter opportunities and availabilities that there are within the city. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
As you just heard, I mentioned that a lot of people are calling in who want to help. So tell us what to do. How should people who want to be of assistance to not only Terrilyn, but the others who are in need this morning in San Francisco?
Well, there's a few different ways that people can help. First of all, an obvious way is to donate to our organization and one of our six programs for homeless families and at-risk families. But also just to continue increasing the public awareness on the issue and continue to put the pressure on the city to actually respond. We are kind of sort of seeing the city have some response at this point, which is good because we've been plugging along with these very high numbers for a long time and nothing has happened. So anything that we can do to increase the public awareness and increase the pressure on the city to actually make something happen is a positive outcome.
And in terms of what those numbers actually are, how has that changed between December 9th, 2011, and what it was like December 9th a year ago?
Well, December 9th a year ago, the numbers were still fairly high, although they've definitely increased. But when I started this job in 2007, we had 76 families on the waiting list for shelter. So we hit a new record high of 276 recently. So you can see those numbers have almost tripled since the recession has hit. And particularly since somewhere around June, the numbers have really started to climb more and more and more. And we're not really sure when it's going to stop.
And if people, again, listening, and we'll start taking some of those calls in just a moment, want to be of specific assistance, one possibility, of course, there are many, many social service agencies, and we want to be inclusive about this, that within the city. But they could donate to Compass Family Services. What about if someone just wants to help Terrilyn's situation in particular? Can they send a check to you? How would that work?
Yes, they can certainly contact our agency directly, and we can coordinate that with the case manager.
Okay, and how does one contact Compass Family Services?
They can call our number at 415-644-0504.
Okay.
And they can ask for myself, Elizabeth Anker, or they can ask for our communications director, Lisa Diaz.
Okay. Lisa Diaz or Elizabeth Anker. It's Compass Family Services, which is working right now with Terrilyn Woodfin's family and many others. As you heard, well over 200 families right now on waiting lists. The number at Compass Family is 415-644-0504, 415-644-0504. Elizabeth Anker, thanks. Stay with us if you can.
And
there may be questions that come in that we'll want to take to you. Want to get back to our panel who is here today to talk more about specific things that can be done within the schools. Because another thing that perhaps people could do, Nicole McAuliffe, people who want to respond understandably to Terrilyn's story. But what about the kinds of things that could be helpful to schools? What are some of the things that schools need, given our tight budget circumstances, that would make a difference in helping kids like Rudy Nguyen and others that Jill has written about?
Well, absolutely. I think one thing that all of us who are parents can do is have an open mind to the fact that within your child's school, wherever that school is, there are probably within your child's classroom a family that's struggling with homelessness, whether it's the kind that we have talked very specifically about here or the kind that Liz alluded to, the doubling up, which I think is really widespread in San Francisco right now, where there are families who are not in a shelter situation that they have united with other families that are struggling and are living in very uncertain situations. So I think as a parent in San Francisco, you need to have an open mind to know that there are probably children in your child's class that would need support. And talking to your own child, you know, that especially this time of year, it's a very delicate time of year for children who are in these at-risk situations. options to talk to your child about the fact that many other children, you know, are not going to be giving out Christmas cards and not participating in the holiday parties the way that, that your family might be.
And that also means, Jill Tucker, that within school classrooms, it's asking kids their typical sorts of assignments, describe what some of those might be like, that there needs to be sensitivity to in terms of how those homeless kids would respond to them.
Right. And in talking to the teachers, you know, they said being aware of what it means to be homeless is critical to the education of these kids. So it could be something as simple as a math assignment on proportions where you ask a child to map their bedroom. Recently, my child brought home a writing assignment that said, describe your home. And so he had to describe his bedroom, the living room, the kitchen, all these things. Well, for a homeless child, they don't have much to describe.
Well, imagine for a moment what Terrellyn Woodfin's son would do with that assignment right now. If asked to describe his home or map his room, he doesn't even know if he'll have a home or a room in a couple of hours.
Exactly.
From now.
I mean, and it could be something as simple as a science experiment where they're asking a child to monitor a pea sprout, you know, and whether they have a place or a window where that pea sprout could grow. I mean, it's very simple. Little things like that you don't even think about.
And probably concrete things, Liz Torres, that some schools need or classrooms need, a refrigerator if kids need a place to store food, a washing machine to wash clothes.
Absolutely. And having a contact person, I think, is really, really important. I find that, you know, once a parent comes to me, all I do is listen. And there's such power in listening. There's so much power in silence. It validates these families. And we also have, all other things in place, like a mentoring program, food bank, clothing warehouse that we have. But specifically to know that they have one person that's going to be there for them.
Let's hear what some of our listeners are thinking about as we talk about this subject this morning. Terry in San Francisco joins us first. Terry.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that I've been listening to your program. I am a college professor here in San Francisco. I'm very agitated by the program because it's great for all of us liberal people to sit on the radio and talk to this woman who has got a problem that needs to be resolved in the next 2.5 hours. She needs a place to stay. And if she doesn't have the money, she can't do that. Why is there nothing? I want resolution. You know, I'll give her the money. You know, I'm not a wealthy woman, but I have two young adult children. It breaks my heart. And, you know, as your listeners, we really need to respond to this.
Yeah.
I don't want to be left hanging. Is this woman going to be on the street with her teenage child? I mean, it's unconscionable. And I think we need some resolution.
Thanks for the call, Terry. No, I appreciate the point. And the direction that we can give, if you're interested in doing that, is to call Compass Family Services, which will coordinate the kind of assistance that you want to provide for Terrellyn in particular. Again, their number is 415-644-0504, 415-644-0504. So understand what you want to do. I applaud you for wanting to do it, and I hope that that will provide you with the contact point to offer up what you're generously wanting to do. Thanks.
Please just give your listeners some sense that it's not just us talking about the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate the thought. Jill Tucker.
You know, I also wanted to say in that regard, the response to Rudy's story has, as we talked about earlier, has been overwhelming. And for those who got a chance to read the story, I can give you an update on him. Because of reader response and the number of people who emailed or contacted Compass Point, Rudy and his family, a few days after the story ran, were placed in a hotel. Because of donations, and they're looking at a long-term apartment funded by a donor. People have been asking to donate everything from Walgreens or grocery store cards to movie tickets to this family. So there are people. I mean, it restores one's faith in humanity.
And you could hear that in Terry's voice, the intensity that she wants, and she wants something specific that she can do. She doesn't want to just listen to talk radio about it. Totally understandable. So let's focus on that for a moment. Where else can people direct their aid? Kevin Guillory, our producer, was just saying everyone who is on the phone right now wants to help. So where do we direct that?
You know, there are so many organizations. You can start. I think Compass Point is a great starting point. They can refer you to other agencies. The city obviously has the housing and other organizations. The school district, the children's schools always take donations. The food pantries take donations.
San Francisco Food Bank, St. Anthony's, all of those provide food services as well. Liz, you want to add something?
Yes, go ahead. The district has set up a fund with the San Francisco School Alliance, and they're accepting donations.
Tell us how to do that.
The address is 114 Sansom Street, Suite 800. And you can catch them on the web, too, which is www.sfschoolalliance.org.
Okay, let's give that again. It's sfschoolalliance.org. And this is an organization that will do what?
They will, if you put down that you want your donation for homeless families, say, I want to donate to homeless families, and they'll collect it, and it will specifically go to homeless families and the school district.
Okay. And listeners, if you have thoughts on where that money can best go to help families like Tara Lynn, again, we've given the number for Compass. If you want to help Tara Lynn in specific, but also more broadly, there are 2,200 kids like Tara Lynn's son. So Compass Families is one place. The San Francisco School Alliance.org is another. San Francisco Food Bank, St. Anthony's, and others. But if you have suggestions, please feel free to call in with those as well. We're going to go next to Charlie in San Francisco. Charlie, go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm up there in the Fairmont Elementary School where Liz Torres is the parent liaison, and I just wanted to say that she truly is the heart and soul of the school, really weaving together a lot of the mutual aid projects and frontline support for families that are struggling at the school. But the reality is that she had to fight for her position this last year. The San Francisco School District was going to cut many of the parent liaisons. And I really want to stress how important it is that we hold our public institutions accountable, whether they be the school district, our city government, the mayor, because the long-term solutions to the affordable housing crisis is a key part is really creating more permanently affordable housing. And I can point to a specific example. Just a stone's throw away from Fairmont Elementary School in the Excelsior District, there's a large city-owned vacant lot, which is in the heart of a family neighborhood, really well-served by transit right next to the Balboa Park Station. And the community has been coming together to advocate for the landowner, which is Muni, to convert that parking lot into permanently affordable housing. But instead, the city is maintaining it as a half-empty lot. And we really want to reach out to our city agencies to join together with our local communities in order to be part of the solution, in order to create more permanently affordable housing so that in addition to providing the frontline support, we can provide permanent solutions to a lot of the struggles that many of these families are facing.
Charlie, thanks. Thanks for that observation and also for underlining the importance of the kind of role that people like Liz Torres play as parent liaisons. Liz is a parent liaison at Fairmont Elementary. Charlie, thanks. You're a veteran of San Francisco Unified, Nicole McAuliffe, as well. So I'll ask you, rather than asking Liz Torres to blow her own trumpet for that position, how important are those? What has to be done to try to encourage that continuity?
Oh, well, you know, I can't say enough about the position of elementary advisor and parent liaison that, you know, principals, teachers, they are busy on the front lines, educating the students, you know, getting the resources together to provide the academic support for our students. So it's really important that there are support staff who can connect with parents. You know, one of the things that Liz mentioned that's so important is that parents very often are afraid to tell their child's teacher that they are in a difficult situation. And, you know, they're even in the most, you know, a principal who has an open door policy, you know, there's still a fear that if they go to the principal and alert the principal to their housing situation, that social service agency might be called. So it's really important that there's an elementary advisor, parent liaison position at all of the schools so that parents have someone to go to that they can trust who has training and resources available to help them. It is so essential. And schools that do not have those positions, I don't know how parents are able to get the support that they need.
And Jill, what's the outlook for that at San Francisco Unified right now? What sort of budget circumstances are they facing that will make that unlikely or likely for that to continue?
Well, for some of the lowest performing schools, it's part of their budget to fund that position to help boost test scores, to do all that it takes to get scores up. And parent liaisons are a part of that. But for other schools, if they want a parent liaison, they have to budget it separately, which means something else goes, whether that's art or music or something else.
Back to our calls. Lee in Berkeley has our next thought. Lee, go ahead.
Hi, am I on?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay, hi. Sorry. I just wanted to comment on, I've worked with homeless adults and families and children, and what I have found is that, especially among the children, there's a tremendous amount of resilience and determination, and I found the panelists' attitude of, you know, I do respect and appreciate what they do, but there's so much pity, and I really lament that because I learned a tremendous amount from working with these folks and have tremendous respect for them. And that just, you know, that aspect of it doesn't seem to come across. And another reason why homeless families hide their situations is not just because they're afraid of having their children taken away, which is a horrible possibility, but also because they don't want the pity. They don't, you know, they don't want us to, you know, get some false virtue from reaching out and helping.
I hear you, Lee. Let's get some response to that. Liz Torres, you heard Lee's concern that you know, it can not necessarily be productive to sort of direct that sort of pity at people.
Yes, and I understand where she's coming from too, but the reason I gave the circumstances that I did was because we were focusing on the families that have the dire needs. But of course, I have a lot of resilient families. I still have families that are double, tripled up, and their kids come to school impeccably dressed. They come well-dressed, cleaned, you know, maybe not in the high-fashion clothes that other children do, but they come with a community. So yes, I can understand where she's coming from, but I also know that we were focusing on that situation, so that's why we revealed that.
No, I understand, and I think it gets us back in a way, Nicole McAuliffe, to this point about there has to be sensitivity, there has to be awareness, but it has to be done in a particular way that's respectful. Otherwise, we're not going to really get at what needs to be done.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, that's an area where the school district can be vital in offering support to administrators and to teachers on how to, you know, really be aware and actually helpful and respectful to families that are in difficult situations.
Comments coming in from our website. Augustina writes in, I'm a student at San Francisco State right now, but when I was younger, for a few years, my mom, my baby brother, and sister and I moved in and out of shelters. My siblings and I were American citizens, but my mother was an illegal immigrant, and she had a tough time finding a job, and our homeless situation didn't end until the kids all moved in with their dads. I feel like if we hadn't, I would never have gotten an opportunity to attend a university. Penny writes in, some high schools now are providing washer-dryer use for homeless children to launder. Many high school locker rooms are being used for showers, also providing storage. Could these be used also on an ongoing need as needed basis? Any awareness of that, Jill, on the kinds of things that are being done within to sort of use schools in alternative ways?
You know, increasingly schools in San Francisco as well as Oakland, they're adopting what they're calling a community schools model, where schools are becoming sort of a one-stop shopping center for all the needs of families, whether that's medical needs, social service needs, a washer and dryer, a food bank. I mean, you name it. In fact, Richmond is building schools right now with dental clinics in them. So what we're seeing increasingly is that schools are realizing, even though their primary mission is to educate kids, if these kids don't have clean clothes or good teeth or a full belly, they can't learn.
To Desra next. Go ahead, Desra, please.
Is that Devra?
Devra, sorry, yes. My mistake.
No problem. Yes, I'm Devra. I work with the Hamilton Family Center, and we work very closely with Liz over at Connecting Point and Compass Family Services, providing services to families. I just wanted to offer a couple solutions that San Francisco is really leading the way on with family homelessness, and that I think we need to put more support towards. In addition to providing safe and dignified shelter and safety net services for families experiencing homelessness now, we need to focus on housing first, providing subsidies to assist families with moving into permanent housing is ever more important. We got a lot of funding into San Francisco to provide homeless prevention, rapid rehousing, subsidies from the federal government. That funding is going away in June. So we currently have, Hamilton is currently serving about 90 families with those subsidies. We will not be able to serve families unless there's other funding sources found.
And if people want to, sorry to interrupt, Ever, but if people want to provide specific assistance to the Hamilton Family Center, how would they go about doing that?
Go to our website, www.hamiltonfamilycenter.org. That's the best way. It has a lot of information on our services and what we do. Can also call our main number, 409-2100, and ask for Davey Gerhard, who's our Director of Development.
Okay, HamiltonFamilyCenter.org. Thanks, Devra, for calling in and participating this morning. Another comment from the website. One possible way to deal with school-age homelessness is to pair healthy families up with homeless families. There are many families who are willing to do this. This could be a good way to continue to promote public awareness. Thoughts on that, either Liz or Nicole?
Oh, the outpouring. Thank you, Jill, for that article, because there's been such an outpouring of support, not only from our families, but from the neighborhood itself. We had a lady, in fact, yesterday come in almost in tears giving us a check. And we have had families at Fairmont that are now opening up their homes and say, you know, if people don't have a place to have Christmas, I want to adopt a family. So we're going to probably do something like that for the whole year, not just for Christmas.
I feel like we're living in such a conflicted time, because there is all of this willingness. You can hear it in people's voices on the air this morning. Yet we're also living in a time where school budgets are cut, state budgets are cut. You hear on the news this morning what the governor is going to do if taxes aren't raised. Where do you place all that in terms of immediate needs and what we can do to, I guess, bring some of that conflicted differentiation of where we seem to be as a society? I'm not making this a very clear question, but it just, we seem so schizophrenic in a way.
I think that's where individuals come into play. You know, what Liz was expressing, you know, with the outpouring of support following Jill's article, I think people are willing to support their public schools, support their children's schools, families in, you know, their neighborhoods. I think raising awareness is really important. And I think, you know, we're going to have to, you know, have a grassroots movement here in
Absolutely.
San Francisco to
Absolutely.
Help our children, because the support is not going to come from the state and federal mm-hmm. government. It's just not. And if we think it is, we're kidding ourselves. So we have to pull together our resources to support our future here in San Francisco, which are these children that need us.
Nicole McAuliffe, she works with some of those children at Mission Dolores Academy in the Mission area of San Francisco, also a former teacher and principal within San Francisco Unified. Jill Tucker at The Chronicle.
Yeah, and I think it goes a little bit back to the caller who talked about the issue of pity. And you know, I don't know that this is necessarily pity. I think that I wrote a few days before this story about Rudy, I wrote a story about the numbers of homeless families. We talked about one particular family that was homeless. But we were writing about the numbers and about how many, you know, what the wait list is for shelters, 7-month wait list. No reaction. I wrote a story that showed the face of homelessness, and I don't think it was with any pity at all. It was just showing what homelessness looked like to a 10-year-old boy, and the reaction was phenomenal. So I think that there is people want to understand what it looks like and feels like, and they are willing to open their wallets and their homes and their doors and their hearts when they realize what it looks like. And it is an awareness that, as you open the program with, the numbers don't tell the whole story.
I'm going to read the first couple of paragraphs of Jill's story. Rudy Nguyen, 10, is homeless. Last week, he was sleeping on the shelter on the floor at a San Francisco drop-in homeless shelter with his parents and his 3-year-old brother Danny. Thin mats kept them off the hard linoleum. In the last 2 months, he has slept three nights at a bus shelter, a week on the streets, and sleeping on his parents' lap in a park. Yet every morning, Rudy Nguyen takes two Muni buses to San Francisco's Spring Valley Elementary School, where he is expected to read, to write, and multiply numbers like every other kid in school. Later in the article, Jill notes, doing homework can be tough without a kitchen table. To Brian next. Brian in Redwood City, go ahead.
Good morning. I just want to say, you know, these kids, they show up in the schools and the teachers, you know, they have to deal with so many issues and, you know, everybody's, you know, jumping down their necks about the numbers, you know, that they're trying to, you know, get their numbers up for their scores and all this stuff. But, you know, these kids have emotional problems and the teachers are the ones that are having to deal with it. And my mom works for Head Start program and she almost walked off the job yesterday because it just becomes so emotional, so helpless. And, you know, we need people in these classes to help the teachers deal with everything.
Brian, thanks. It's an important point. I'm glad you raised it. We're short on time, and I want to come back to just how people can be of assistance. Nancy writes in, your listeners aren't all in San Francisco. I realize you can't list every agency, but how can we help if we're outside of San Francisco? Maria responds in part to that by also noting in her email that there are places, the Shelter Network in San Mateo County is one place you can go. Just last quick thoughts on where people can go outside of San Francisco?
Well, in the Bay Area, Catholic Charities CYO has a network of support services in San Mateo County, Marin County, and here in San Francisco. And many of the shelters that are operated by Catholic Charities CYO.
And Liz Torres, last thoughts on what you'd most like listeners to help with this morning?
Basically, just opening up your hearts and opening up your homes like you have been doing. Thank you, San Francisco. And listening. Just listen to your children. The children are the ones that speak to each other, and they're the ones that communicate these situations.
Liz Torres, thank you. Nicole McAuliffe, thank you. Terilyn Woodfin, thanks for calling in your story. Again, if you want to help, you can do so by contacting Compass Family Services in San Francisco. You can help Terilyn directly that way. Their number, 415-644-0504. Jill Tucker, thanks, Lass, for writing that story and making us all think about that this morning.
Thank you.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Danny Bringer is our engineer. Dan Zoll, our senior editor. Raul Ramirez is our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.